tightly to avoid their teammates.
He's doing a great job with them,
a deep male voice tells me. I turn to find an older man joining me on the bleachers. Dean? I ask. The man nods. Yeah, he looks like he's enjoying himself.
He is. I'm Doug Ellis.
We shake hands. Allie Hayes, friend of Dean's. He was bragging about how well the Hurricanes are doing this year. Better than his team. Ellis chuckles wryly.
Breyer's not going to get another Frozen Four appearance this year, which is too bad. How's Dean taking it?
All right, I guess. He wants to win, but I don't think hockey is his life. He plans to go to law school next year. Dean hasn't spoken of the pros at all, not the way Garrett does. From what I can tell, he loves the game, but the game doesn't define him, which I appreciate. Sometimes Garrett's hockey talk gets really tiresome. I'm not sure how Hannah handles it, but I guess when you're in love, you overlook things like that. Beside me, Ellis sighs.
Seems like a damn shame, this law school thing. He's got teacher written all over him.
We watch the players run their drill, while Dean takes the time to speak to a few of the skaters who aren't as fast or as smooth as their teammates. He doesn't raise his voice, but the kids listen intently. He pats them on the head or back before he lets them go. Do you have a kid out there? I dip my head toward the ice.
Not anymore. I have a son who played on the Hurricanes, but he's in high school now. One of the other PE teachers offered to take over for me after Wyatt moved on, but I wouldn't give up this coaching post for anything. Kids at this age are special. They're hungry to learn, still think an authority figure is there to help them, not hold them back, and just the threat of discipline works as effectively as the actual act of punishment.
It's all downhill from there, I take it?
You have no idea.
He shakes his head in mock dismay.
The older they get, the more they think they know. Dean, though, he's got the touch. I've had older kids hang around just to listen to him talk to the Hurricanes. And it isn't just the boys that are drawn to him.
Ellis points to Dakota.
That little girl looks at him like he hung the moon. And she looked that way even before he gave her the pink skates. He's patient and speaks to the kids like they're important. You don't see that in a lot of college students. Hell, you don't see that kind of behavior in most adults.
Ellis shrugs.
If Dean took an interest in coaching, he'd be great at it. But I guess spending your days with middle schoolers isn't a glamorous job like being a lawyer.
Dean didn't pick law because it's glamorous, I object, feeling the need to defend him again.
Then you should talk to him about teaching or coaching. Anything that lets him work with kids. He's made for it.
Ellis starts to get up, but I stop him. Why are you telling me this?
Because you also look at him like he hung the moon, and I get the sense he feels the same about you.
Ellis tips his head, and then he's gone, skating over to join Dean and the boys on the ice.
Dean. What were you and Doug looking all serious about? I tease, linking my fingers through Allie's as we cross the parking lot toward my car. I click the key fob. Please don't tell me he was hitting on you. She blanches. Oh, God, no. In front of children? That would be so inappropriate. I can't help but laugh. For someone who's such a dirty girl in bed, her obsession with propriety and labels is kind of ridiculous. So what did he want? We slide into the car. Allie still hasn't answered the question, which brings a frown to my lips. Okay, now I'm starting to think she lied to me, and Coach Ellis was hitting on her. But she opens her mouth and startles me by saying, "He thinks you should be a teacher." My eyebrows fly up. "He said that?" She nods. "A teacher or a coach or anything that lets you work with kids." Those were his words. "Personally, I think you should consider being a phys ed teacher. Then you get to blow a whistle and wear those tiny gym shorts. Your ass would look great in them." A slight smile tugs at the corners of her mouth. "Anyway, I guess Ellis saw your something." "My something?" "That's what happened to me when I was 12, she explains. I went on my first casting call, and the casting director told me she saw something in me. It's what convinced me to keep auditioning and pursue acting as a career. I scoff. Yeah, but you were talented to begin with, babe. All I did today was give a kid a skating lesson and run some hockey drills with the boys. Which was a lot of fun, I can't deny that. But the idea of making a career out of running around a gymnasium and blowing a whistle at little kids is crazy. It's crazy, right? I don't know, Allie says teasingly. Maybe dodgeball games are your destiny. Or coaching, at least. You'd be amazing at that. You love working with those boys. True, but... oh, for Christ's sake, why is this even a topic of discussion? I'm headed to law school next fall. I start the car in reverse out of the parking space, changing the subject before Allie can tease me again. How'd rehearsal go? Good, actually. Mallory memorized the final act, so Steven is happy. But I'm still a tad worried. How come? We're taking a 3-week hiatus for the holidays. What if she falls into an eggnog coma and forgets all her lines? I chuckle. I'm sure it'll be okay. When is opening night? First week of February. She pauses. By then, I'll probably know if I got that Fox pilot, too. There's no enthusiasm in her voice, and I glance over with a frown. She told me she'd sent an audition tape to the producers in L.A., but other than that, she hasn't mentioned the role, and I don't think she's even called her agent for an update. But she ought to be clamoring for an update, right? I don't know much about showbiz, but a Fox pilot seems like a pretty big deal to me. Do you want the part? I ask slowly. Her hesitation is more telling than anything else she could have said. I press my foot on the brakes as we near a red light. Talk to me, babe. What's bugging you about this project? Allie shrugs. I'm just not in love with the role, and... well, lately I've been thinking I might want to stay away from comedies and find more dramatic roles. Or maybe stage work. Maybe in New York. The confession startles me, but when I stop to think about it, it becomes obvious where it stems from. You want to stay close to your dad? She turns to me with sad blue eyes. That's definitely part of it. He's getting worse, and I'm not crazy about the idea of living on the opposite end of the country from him. What if something happens and he needs me? I'd have to sign a contract. I can't exactly walk up to the producers and say, sorry, gotta go to New York for a few weeks. Shoot around me. What about hiring a nurse? I suggest. God, no. He'd never be cool with that. I actually brought up the idea last year. It wasn't something he needed at the time. We were just discussing options for the future, but he freaked the fuck out. He said he could take care of himself, thank you very much. I fight a smile because I can almost hear Joe Hayes' crotchety voice in my head uttering those words. She bites her lip. It's true. Right now, he can take care of himself. But the numbness in his legs is so much worse than it was last year. So is his vision. He's using the cane for now, but what if eventually he needs a wheelchair? What if we're looking at paralysis, blindness? If that happens, he will need someone. Maybe not round-the-clock care, but I don't like the idea of him being all alone in Brooklyn. I reach over the center console to squeeze her hand. It's cold, trembling. She's scared, I realize. Scared of losing her father the way she'd already lost her mother. I'm not sure what to say to make her feel better, because truth is, she has every right to be scared. Both my parents are healthy and active, so I don't spend much time worrying they might die. When I'm with them, I don't see a thundercloud of doom hovering above their heads. But Mr. Hayes is suffering from a disease that's slowly eating away at his nervous system. He's dealt with it for years, while his daughter stood on the sidelines watching it progress, helpless to stop it. Jesus, I'm suddenly floored by her strength. I hadn't understood, not until this very moment, how difficult this must be for Allie. Let's not talk about this anymore. I'm bumming myself out. Her voice wobbles before steadying. Tell me more about this restaurant you're taking me to. After dinner, we drive to my house. Last night, I stayed with Allie in the dorm, so tonight it's her turn to sleep over. We've got a nice, fair arrangement going, except for the times when Allie plays the vagina card, in which case the arrangement becomes, do what your girlfriend wants. My girlfriend? Fuck me. It still boggles my mind. I ain't complaining, though. Allie and I have a blast together. We also have wild, sweaty sex on the regular, so I'm trying to focus on that and not read too much into the rest of it. Too bad my friends can't do the same. Garrett is convinced I'll do something to screw up the relationship, and that it'll end in a massive fireball that blows up in all of our faces. Sometimes I wish he gave me more credit, says the man who almost drove someone to suicide. The painful memory grips my heart, conjuring up the image of Miranda and her tears, and the harrowing late-night phone calls where she threatened to kill herself and accused me of ruining her life. Christ, I feel sick every time I allow myself to think about it, so I shove the unwelcome reminders aside. She never accepted my friend request, I realize. I guess that's not much of a surprise. Allie and I walk into the cramped front hall of the townhouse, which smells almost as good as the restaurant we just came from. Tucker must be home. Tuck, where you at? Kitchen, is his faint reply. I shrug out of my coat and toss it on one of the hooks in the wall. Allie does the same before bending over to unzip her leather boots. I smack her ass, then grin when she scowls at me. What you making? I call out to Tucker. Soup, he calls back, and baking some bread. I sigh. Sometimes I worry about him, I tell Allie. The more domestic he gets, the bigger the risk of his penis falling off. She tisks in disapproval. Sexist bastard? I think you mean sexy bastard, I say helpfully. No, I got it right the first time. We move toward the living room just as the front door swings open behind us. I turn around, and I literally have 1 second to react before a blonde tornado flies toward me and launches herself at me. Surprise! The tornado shouts, flinging both arms around my neck. Guess who's spending the weekend? I'm so dazed and taken aback that I return the hug on instinct. From the corner of my eye, I see Allie's mouth twist in a deep frown. Shit. I know the conclusion she's jumping to right now, and I need to squash it pronto. When Allie clears her throat purposefully, the intruder swivels her head and says, Oh, hi. And you are? Dean's girlfriend, Allie replies tightly. Who are you? Rather than respond, Summer whirls toward me again. You have a girlfriend? What the hell, Dickie? Why am I always the last one to know these things? Allie makes a noise. I think it might be a growl. Did you just call my boyfriend Dickie? Yeah, so what? Summer challenges. I quickly intervene before a catfight breaks out. I mean, catfights in general are hot as fuck, but not when I'm related to one of the pussycats. Summer, this is Allie. Allie, Summer, I sigh. My little sister.
27. Allie. I'm annoyed with myself for not realizing it sooner. Of course this stunning, vibrant girl is Dean's sister. Now that my claws have retracted, I can clearly see the resemblance. Summer's hair is the same shade of blonde, her eyes the same vivid green. She's a lot shorter than Dean, but far taller than I am. At least 5'9", if I had to guess.
What are you doing here?
Dean directs the demand at his sister, who isn't put off in the slightest. I told you I was coming to visit, remember?
No, you told me you wanted to visit.
He makes an aggravated noise.
You can't just show up at people's houses without giving them any warning, Summer. What if I wasn't home?
But you were, she beams. And now I'm here. See, the universe always gets shit right. He arches a brow.
And did the universe happen to mention that I have an away game tomorrow? And that the bus leaves at 8 in the morning? And that I probably won't get back until midnight?
Disappointment fills Summer's eyes. Fuck. And I'm leaving early on Sunday morning. She goes quiet for a moment, and then her expression brightens. That's fine. It just means we need to do all our catching up tonight. Where should I put my bag? I press my knuckles to my mouth to smother a laugh. I get the feeling there's nothing on God's green planet that can bring Summer De Laurentiis down. She seems like the kind of chick who falls asleep wearing a smile. Dean speaks in a strained voice, as if he views his sister's surprise visit as a major inconvenience.
I kinda had plans tonight, boogers.
Boogers? Plans change, she says flippantly. And your plans now include me. Her green eyes flick in my direction. You're cool with me hanging out with you and Dickie tonight, right, girlfriend? The laugh I was trying to hold in pops out. Actually, it's more of a howl, because, oh my God, why does she call him Dickie? I don't mind at all, I assure her. I meet Dean's irritated gaze and add, are you going to explain the nickname, or should I create my own backstory for it? Summer grins at me. It's one of my least interesting anecdotes, actually. I couldn't pronounce his name when I was little, and our older brother, Nick, I called Nicky, so I just replaced the first letter and voila, Dickie. She winks conspiratorially. He hates it. I don't blame him. I can see a minx like Summer having way too much fun tormenting her big brother with an embarrassing nickname like that. So, what are we doing tonight? Summer asks eagerly. She tosses her long blonde hair over one shoulder and does a little twirl. Sweet Jesus, this girl is far too energetic. Is there a club anywhere around here? A bar? I have my fake ID with me, so...
Then you'd better hand it over, Dean interrupts, because there's no way I'm aiding and abetting a minor.
His sister snorts. Don't give me that shit! You were getting drunk when you were 13.
I was very mature for my age.
You're not mature for your age now.
At least I didn't get kicked out of Brown for setting togas on fire.
I didn't get kicked out of Brown, and I did not set anything on fire.
How would I know? I have no idea what you even did to get kicked out, because nobody in the family will fucking tell me.
I didn't get kicked out. My head is spinning from moving back and forth between them. Is this what all siblings are like? If so, I feel fortunate that I'm an only child. All this bickering seems like it would be exhausting. And if you quit yelling at me, Summer is grumbling, then maybe we can sit down like adults and I can tell you why I'm on probation. She waves a manicured hand. But let's save that for later. I'm in the mood for a party. You think one of the frats is hosting one tonight? Wait, what am I saying? Of course there'll be a party on Greek Row. It's the only way those pervos ever get laid, right? I choke on another laugh. Dean is more on edge than I've ever seen him, his fists balled against his sides as if he's trying not to throttle his sister.
We're not going to a party tonight. I already told you I've got to be up early to meet the bus, which means we're staying in. A nice, quiet night in, he says firmly.
Of course, he says this right as the front door opens again and four hockey players trudge inside. Or maybe three players and a civilian, because while I know Logan, Fitzy, and Hollis, I don't recognize the fourth guy. He has dark, spiky hair and looks too small to be a hockey player.
Hey!
Logan nods in greeting and shrugs out of his jacket. The hallway isn't big enough to accommodate so many people, and I find myself being squashed up against the wall as the guys push their way inside.
This is my sister,
Dean says in a resigned tone that makes me hide a smile. The guys nod and say hello, but they're in a big hurry to get to the living room. Logan glances at us over his shoulder.
Morris got his hands on a demo version of the latest Mob Boss. Hasn't even hit the market yet. We'll probably be up late.
Beside me, Summer breaks out in a broad smile.
Don't make it too late. Bus leaves at 8 tomorrow,
Dean reminds his roommate.
Logan shrugs. I'll sleep on the bus.
Then he disappears into the living room. Summer is practically vibrating with excitement now. She sidles close to me and hisses, Who was that? I wrinkle my forehead.
You mean Logan? He lives here, but don't get any ideas. He has a girlfriend.
No, not him. Her hand flutters dismissively. The big guy with the tats. I didn't catch his name.
Oh, Fitzy. Colin Fitzgerald, I clarify. One of your brother's teammates.
Summer's green eyes twinkle. She flips her hair again and announces, I want him.
Summer,
Dean says in exasperation, while I desperately try not to laugh.
What? I'm just being honest.
His sister blinks innocently.
Be honest or be a jerk. That's what you taught me when I was 12, remember? After I stole your favorite shirt, then accidentally dropped it in the sewer.
How do you accidentally drop a shirt in the sewer? I blurt out.
I wasn't wearing it. It fell out of my backpack.
She smirks at Dean.
And then I lied about what happened, and you gave me a speech about honesty, remember? Well, congratulations, Dickie. I'm super duper honest now.
She points her finger at the living room doorway.
That was the hottest piece of man meat I have ever seen. And I want him.
I'm going to murder you in your sleep one day,
Dean tells his sister.
Swear to God.
Her smile is the epitome of sweetness.
Aw, Dickie, you would never, ever do that. Wanna know why?
Why?
He grumbles.
Because you love me.
Honestly, I think I love her too.
Dean, I am terrified of what I'll find when I get home tonight. I'll only be gone for 16 hours, but Summer Hayward De Laurentiis is capable of doing earthquake-level damage in 16 minutes. When she was 13, Nick and I were home alone with her. We turned our backs for 20 minutes, tops. And when we walked into the living room, the liquor cabinet was overturned, broken glass was everywhere, and Summer grinned at us and said, Oops. She said she'd wanted a taste of alcohol to see what all the fuss was about, destroying thousands of dollars worth of liquor in the process. Granted, she's 20 now, but do I trust her? Absolutely not. I'm just hoping Allie can find a way to control her. And yes, I recruited my girlfriend into babysitting my sister today. No way I was letting Summer loose on campus without a chaperone. During the 5-hour bus ride to Scranton, Allie sends me updates about their day, along with running commentary about how great my sister is, and OMGs every time Summer reveals an embarrassing detail from my childhood. Having breakfast at dinner. OMG, your first word was booby? Why does that not surprise me? Taking S to the salon, she wants a mani. You're scared of tattoo needles? S just told me you almost got a tat when you were 18 but had to leave because you were scared. I fucking hate my sister. My phone stays in the visiting team's locker room during the game, and not even O'Shea's cold glares and snarled criticism can bring me down today. Because we skate off the ice after third period with an actual W under our belts. My good mood follows me out of the arena and onto the bus, and I settle in for the long ride, relieved by the latest batch of messages I find. Driving to Boston for lunch, S wants to do some shopping. Awesome lunch, heading home now. Oh, it's snowing. S and I are taking a walk. Home, chilling and girl talk. Tell Tuck his tomato soup is da bomb. Saw on Twitter you won the game. Fuck yeah. Movie marathon, putting phone on silent, see you when you get back. The last message came in around 8 o'clock. Good. I hope that means Allie and Summer are tucked under a blanket in the living room watching a movie, and not out causing trouble. Huh. And Allie was right. It is snowing. Once the bus crosses the state line into Massachusetts, there are suddenly white flakes dancing outside my window. I love winter, so I wholly approve of the sight. It's close to midnight when we arrive at our own arena. I ride home in the Beamer with Tuck while Garrett and Logan head for the dorms to spend the night with their girlfriends. 10 minutes later, I pull into our driveway. Not a single light flickers in any of the windows, but I catch flashes from the television flickering behind the living room curtains. The front hall is pitch black when we step inside. I walk ahead of Tucker, kicking off my shoes as I fumble for the light switch. I don't get the chance to flick it, because a blood-curdling shriek suddenly slices through the silence. Before I can react, I'm showered from head to toe with what feels like a tidal wave of lukewarm liquid. Another scream shatters my eardrums, and I'm still struggling to figure out what the fuck is going on when something hard connects with my left temple. Crack! Pain swims in my head, and I hit the floor like a sack of potatoes. Chapter 28. Dean. Fact number one, the Hastings Police Department has about 8 officers on staff. Fact number two, I think every single one of them is at my fucking house right now. Do you want to press charges? The officer in charge hovers over Allie like a protective bear, a sneer on his face as he glares accusingly in my direction. From my perch on the bottom step of the staircase, I glare right back at him. The EMT who's examining my temple makes a reprimanding sound when I swivel my head in the opposite direction, but I ignore him, because what's happening right now is goddamn ludicrous. If anyone should be pressing charges, it's me, I say in disbelief. The cop holds up a hand to silence me. We're speaking to Miss Hayes, sir. Oh yes, Miss Hayes, the crazy maniac who happens to be my girlfriend. The kung fu master who knocked me out with a Wayne Gretzky paperweight. But hey, at least the lights are on. This way everyone and their fucking mothers can witness my disgrace. You're speaking to the wrong person, I mutter through clenched teeth. I'm the one who was attacked. One of the female deputies narrows her eyes at me. From what we can see, sir, the young ladies are the victims here. She waves her hand at the floor. We walked in to find you lying in a pool of blood. It was soup, tomato soup. And shouting obscenities at Miss Hayes and Miss De Laurentiis. Because they knocked me out. Clearly they felt you were a threat if they took measures to incapacitate you, another officer says coolly. He purses his lips and the sexual predator mustache he's rocking bushes up. Oh my fucking God, I'm going to strangle them. The moment these cops leave, I'm going to fucking strangle them. Sir, we're conducting an interview, the lead officer snaps. Please refrain from speaking unless addressed. Tucker, who's leaning against the wall a few feet away, looks like he's about to pee his pants laughing. His laughter is of the silent variety, vibrating in his broad shoulders and staining his cheeks bright red. At least Allie has the decency to look sheepish. Summer just looks bored. I overreacted, Allie confesses. Talk us through what happened, the lady cop urges gently. I grind my molars as Allie takes a breath. Meanwhile, the paramedic at my side is groping the back of my head like he's trying to get me off. I just finished heating up a bowl of soup in the kitchen. Well, it wasn't too hot because I prefer my soup to be lukewarm, otherwise it burns the roof of my mouth and I hate it when that happens. She sighs. Sorry, irrelevant. Anyway, I was on my way to the living room. All the lights were off because we were watching a movie. I heard footsteps outside the front door, and suddenly someone just walked in like they live here. I do live here, I growl. Allie avoids my furious gaze. I thought it was an intruder. An intruder with a key to the house, I say sarcastically. The cops glare at me again. I close my mouth. I threw the bowl at his head and grabbed the first weapon I could find. She points to the Gretzky paperweight we use to hold down the mail on the hall table so it doesn't fly away whenever someone opens the front door. Now it's on the hardwood floor next to a massive puddle of tomato soup. I'm surprised the cops didn't put little evidence flags around it. It wasn't Dean's fault, Allie insists. Seriously, it's all on me. I freaked out for no reason. She finally looks over at me. See, this is why I don't like horror movies. You watch one scary movie when you're a kid, and suddenly everyone who comes to your door is a serial killer. Are you kidding me right now? You'll watch a horror movie with my sister, but not me? We have to watch the cancer movie? Dickie, Summer chides. You're being grumpy. I glare at my sister with enough force to make her wince. Not one word out of you, I snap. And don't think I didn't feel you kick me right before I passed out. Who does that, Summer? Who kicks a man when he's down? From the corner of my eye, I see Tucker sink to the floor. He buries his face in his hands, shaking with laughter. The EMT blocks my line of sight by squatting in front of me. I need to examine you for a concussion. Oh, for fuck's sake. He whips out a pen light and blinds me with it. Allie appears behind him, worry etched into her forehead. Oh no, does he have a concussion? She kneels down and touches my arm. Do we need to call your coach? Her question captures the attention of the cop in charge. Your coach? Shit. You're one of Jensen's boys? I give an irritable nod. I still want to throw down with these assholes for treating me like a suspect instead of the victim. What's your name again? Dean De Laurentiis. Oh yeah, I recognize you now. He sounds excited. That was some Frozen Four win last season, kid. You played a good game. Mustache cop strides up. The team's not looking too good these days. What's going on over there? But that Davenport kid is fast, another cop raves. Any chance Jensen will put him on Graham's line? For the next 10 minutes, the cops badger me about the team and our chances for another national title, while the paramedic forces me to endure his unnecessary concussion protocol until finally determining I don't need to go to the ER. He gathers up his supplies, and then he and the cops file out of the house. The moment they're gone, I shoot to my feet. My wet socks squish uncomfortably with each step. My entire torso is stained red, and tomato soup drips from my hair as I advance on the girls. Well, namely Allie, the person who'd wielded the weapon that knocked me out. I'm taking a shower, I announce. And when I get out, you and I are going to have a little talk about how fucking crazy you are. Her cheeks redden. I'm sorry, okay? I already admitted I overreacted. You think? I hop on one foot, then the other, to peel off my disgusting socks. I'm serious. I'm not done being angry at you, so you better be waiting for me in my room when I'm out of the shower. What are you gonna do? Spank me? I growl. Don't fucking tempt me, babe. Gross, Summer pipes up. Please don't discuss your BDSM sex games in front of your sister. I point my finger at her. Not another word. I glance at Tucker, the traitor who was getting so much joy out of my misery. Please escort Summer to Garrett's room and figure out a way to lock her inside it. Tuck snickers, but he reaches out his hand to her. Come on, little sis, let's leave the poor man alone. He's already taken enough of a beating tonight.
Allie, I'm not too proud to admit when I've screwed up. Tonight, I screwed up royally. Not only did I attack my boyfriend with a paperweight, I then proceeded to call the police because for a second there, I was genuinely worried I might have killed him. I feel awful. Awful enough that I'm willing to let Dean yell at me for as long as he wants, which is why I'm sitting at the edge of his bed just like he'd ordered.
Look at that. She listens.
Dean mocks as he enters the bedroom. He drops his towel and walks toward the dresser. As he puts on a pair of black boxer briefs, I dutifully wait for a lecture that doesn't come. I thought you were going to yell at me, I remind him. He rubs the side of his head, groaning softly.
I changed my mind. My head is killing me.
Alarm shoots through me. That's not good. Should we go to the emergency room?
Nah, I'm fine, Alley Cat.
Guilt continues to twist in my stomach as I watch him rub his temple.
I haven't been hit that hard in years, and I play hockey, he grumbles. You're freakishly strong, you know that?
I know. I offer a sheepish look.
I told you, my dad made sure I knew self-defense.
Well, kudos to your dad for making sure you could protect yourself. Followed by a fuck you to your dad for turning you into a deadly weapon.
He groans again.
Jesus, I can't believe you got the drop on me like that. You're lucky I love you, babe. If any other girl had done this to me...
You love me? I blurt out. Dean halts mid-sentence. For a second, he looks genuinely confused, as if he doesn't know what I'm talking about. As if he doesn't realize what he'd said. But I heard it, loud and clear. My heart skips a beat. He just told me he loved me. You just said it, I tell him, fighting the huge smile that's threatening to surface.
I...
He clears his throat.
Well, damn. I guess I did.
Did you mean it? When he nods, my lips start twitching uncontrollably. God, I want to smile so fucking bad right now. I want to hear it again, I beg. He scrubs his fist over his chin, looking adorably uncomfortable.
Aw, shit, babe. Don't make me say it again. It's bad enough that I said it first. That's never happened to me before.
The smile breaks free. It stretches my face from ear to ear. I fly off the bed and into his arms, too giddy to kiss him like a grown-up. My kisses are sloppy and overly eager, and Dean is laughing like crazy as I maul him with my mouth. I abruptly pull back. Are you sure your head doesn't hurt?
It's fine,
he insists, and a deep rumble of delight leaves his throat when I smack some more kisses all over his face. Okay, good, because I think we should have sex now. I push him toward the bed and reach for his waistband. He's highly amused.
We should, and why's that?
Because you told me you love me, and I love you too. And you know how turned on I get by all this emotional stuff. I'm already ripping my shirt off. You have no idea how wet I am right now, sweetie. The humor in his eyes is replaced with smoky desire.
Show me,
he orders. I ease my yoga pants off my hips, undies too. I kick them away and move closer. Then I take Dean's hand and bring it between my legs. He instantly curls it over me, and I cover his knuckles with my palm, grinding both our hands against my damp core. Dean groans, and this time not in pain. Or maybe it's a different kind of pain. His erection tense in his boxer briefs, a hard, long ridge of arousal that I'm dying to feel inside me.
Allie.
His voice is husky. Hmm? I rock my hips against our hands.
I love you.
Those three syllables send a jolt of heat to my core. I moan. So does he. I know he felt the way my thighs clenched and the rush of moisture that must have coated his palm.
Jesus,
he chokes out.
This love thing really does make you wet.
Told you. I give him another shove and he hits the mattress, falling back on his elbows. I'm going to be coming all over you. Like exploding ovaries and multiple orgasms kind of coming. Dean reaches into a drawer for a condom, and I'm on top of him before he even has his dick out.
Love you,
he whispers, then presses his mouth to mine. The kiss is sweet and gentle, sending flutters of pleasure through my body. His hand trembles as he puts the condom on, and our mouths are still locked when he rolls me over and pushes just the tip of his cock inside me. I wrap my arms around his shoulders and cant my hips, trying to draw him in deeper. It works. With a soft groan, he slips in another inch, then another one, until finally he's all the way in, stretching me, filling me. Our eyes lock in a hazy stare as he starts to move. I feel so fucking full. It's incredible. Dean pushes a strand of hair off my forehead and strokes my cheek, making love to me in a lazy, blissful tempo that has my toes curling.
Love you,
he says again, and damned if my entire body doesn't sing with joy. I hold him tighter against me, welcoming each slow thrust, He slides his hands under my ass and lifts me up so that his pubic bone presses into my clit every time he drives deep. It brings stars to my eyes, makes me gasp and moan and writhe until my whole world centers on Dean. When my orgasm ripples through me, I have the words, "I love you," on my lips. His green eyes burn with emotion. He lets out a husky groan and sags on top of me, thrusting deep one last time. Then he says,
"I love you too,"
as he trembles with release. 29. Allie. The rest of December flies by. Before I know it, the holidays are upon us, and I'm rewarded with 3 weeks of downtime, family time, and stuffing my face full of holiday treats time. I'm spending the break with my dad, but I'll be in Connecticut with Dean for the first 2 days. His family is heading to St. Bart's for a couple of weeks, so this is my only chance to see him until he gets back, at which point he'll join me in New York for our last 3 days of freedom. Dean had asked me to go to the island with him, but as much as I hate turning down a free trip to paradise, I'd rather be in Brooklyn. Who knows where I'll end up after I graduate? I need to take advantage of every second I have with my dad. Still, I can't say I'm not bummed when I have to leave Connecticut. Although Dean had told me his parents were cool, laid-back peeps, a part of me had doubted it. I mean, they're filthy rich lawyers who own 3 houses. Hell, maybe more than 3. Dean doesn't have a bragging bone in his body, so for all I know, his family has a house in every country on the globe. You'd never know it just by looking at them, though. Dean's mom wore jeans and a flannel shirt the whole time I was in Greenwich, confessing to me that her favorite thing about having time off is ditching the business attire she wears to the firm. Her name is Lori, and apparently she kept her maiden name and still practices law as Lori Hayward. Dean's dad, Peter, is equally easygoing. He did some paperwork in his office every morning, but for the most part, he spent all his time with his kids, going skiing with Summer, playing 2-on-1 hockey with his sons on the outdoor rink behind their mansion. Yep, they have their own skating rink. Dean's brother Nick is one of the nicest men I've ever met. He brought his new girlfriend, a lawyer at another firm, and though she was uptight at first, she was sweet once I got to know her. And Summer, well, she's just Summer. No filters, larger than life, contagious laughter. Sometimes I think I love Dean's sister more than I love him. As sad as I am to say goodbye to the Hayward De Laurentiises, I'm excited to see my dad. I decide to splurge and take a cab from Greenwich to Brooklyn, and it's late afternoon when I roll my huge suitcase into the front entryway and call out for my father. I find him in the living room, wearing sweats and reading a book called The Physics of Hockey. He greets me with an indulgent smile, then fusses and gripes as I kiss his cheek and hammer him with questions about how he's feeling. He finally cuts me off to ask about my visit to Connecticut. When I reveal what an amazing time it was, he looks slightly disappointed, which makes me frown. We speak on the phone a couple times a week, so he's already aware I'm dating Dean, but he's been surprisingly tight-lipped about it. After I told him, he simply grunted and hasn't commented on the relationship since. He comments now.
"He's not long-term, AJ,"
Dad says with a tired sigh.
"I hope you know that."
The blunt words sting. I mean, it's not like Dean and I are planning to mail out save the dates next week, but I don't envision us breaking up anytime soon. We're 22. We're in love. Going forward might be tough, what with me living in LA or New York and Dean in Cambridge for the next 2 years, but I'm certain we can make it work if we try hard at it. And once Dean finishes law school, he'll be able to practice law wherever he wants, wherever I am. We haven't discussed it, but Dean hasn't given me any indication he wants to break up after graduation. "He could be," I say quietly. "Long term, I mean." Dad gives an adamant shake of his head.
"He's not."
His voice loses some of its hard edges.
Do you want to know the most important thing I learned after 18 years with your mom?
I sit on the couch beside him and wait for him to continue.
Relationships are a fucking pain in the ass sometimes.
I have to laugh. Mom told me the same thing. The thought of the last conversation I had with my mother brings an ache to my heart. She told me you guys had problems at one point in your marriage, I confess. I've never discussed this with him before. Mom had been open about their struggles, though. Not in detail, but she did make sure I knew how hard they'd worked on their marriage.
We did,
he confirms in a pained voice.
It was the traveling. Eva gave up modeling after you were born, so she was always at home, and I was always on the road.
He gives me a fierce look.
I never touched another woman, AJ. That's not what our issues were about.
I know.
It was goddamn hard. The long separations, the brief phone calls. I'd come home and we'd feel like strangers, have to get to know each other all over again. It took a lot of effort to work through that.
Agony flashes in his eyes.
Then she got sick and it got even harder.
A lump forms in my throat. I was 12 when she was diagnosed with lung cancer. I remember begging to go with them whenever Dad drove her to chemo. They never let me. And on the days where the side effects were too debilitating, when her skin was grayer than ash and she was vomiting so violently she'd cracked a rib, they would send me to my aunt in Queens. They hadn't wanted me to see her like that. But I saw enough.
Dean.
My father clears his throat, shifting the subject again.
I know men like him. They aren't equipped to handle the big stuff. The life-changing setbacks. The game changers. If you, God forbid, got sick or injured, or if a recession descends on this country and bankrupts your man's empire,
a disdainful note bites into his tone.
He'd fall apart like a cheap tent.
That's not true, I protest. Dean is a good man, and he's good to me. Good for me.
You're fooling yourself, AJ. Yes, he's good to you now. He lives a perfect life. He pays other people to clean up his messes. And as long as everything keeps going his way, he'll be the best thing that ever happened to you. But if shit goes south, he'll be gone. He won't stand by you, because that would entail stepping out of his perfect bubble, letting the ugly stuff in. That boy doesn't do ugly.
You're wrong, I whisper. He curses.
Christ, it makes me sick to say this to you, sweetheart. You think I like seeing that hurt look on your face? Rips me apart, AJ. But I want you to be prepared for when it happens.
Dad lets out a resigned breath.
Mark my words, you won't be able to count on him. Better wrap your head around that now, before it's too late.
I don't allow my father's warning and his completely unjustified opinion of Dean to ruin the holiday for us. I get it, he's worried. He doesn't want me to suffer another broken heart. And I can't even get pissed about the blunt way he'd presented his case, because Blunt is my dad's middle name. But he's wrong. Dean would be there for me if I needed him. He already has, rushing to my dorm the night Sean's verbal attack ripped me to shreds. So I'm choosing not to second-guess the relationship I'm receiving so much joy from and forcing myself to enjoy the rest of the break. I spend Christmas Eve, which also happens to be my birthday, at home with my dad. We watch It's a Wonderful Life, as we always do, and I bawl my eyes out, as I always do. Then we drink hot chocolate, and he gives me the same present he always does. $300, with a scribbled note telling me to buy myself something pretty. Dad sucks at gift-giving. I don't care, because I already got the only gift I wanted. My father, as healthy as he can be at the moment, alive and here with me. A few days later, Dean is back from St. Bart's, looking tanned and relaxed as he picks me up at the brownstone.
I'm surprised he chose to drive, since it would have been easier for me to hop the train and meet him in the city. But when I question him, he just grins and says,
"We're not going to Manhattan. I have a birthday surprise for you."
"You already gave me a birthday surprise," I remind him. He totally had, too. A call from St. Bart's and the hottest phone sex I've ever had in my life. I made so much noise when I was coming, I had to thank my lucky stars that my dad is a heavy sleeper.
"This one is even better,"
Dean promises, and then he plants a quick kiss on my lips and pulls away from the curb.
"I missed you."
I can't fight a goofy smile. "I missed you." Winking, he reaches for my hand and places it directly on his crotch, which is sporting a noticeable semi.
"Little Dean missed you too."
I can see that. I rub the growing bulge and he groans.
"Keep doing that and I'll shoot in my pants,"
he warns. My smile widens. Is that a challenge? I drag down his zipper and slide my hand inside, curling my fingers around his hard, pulsing shaft. Jeez, he wasn't kidding. Less than a minute of stroking and he groans again, clutching the steering wheel in a death grip as he chokes out one word.
"Coming."
I don't let him ruin his pants because they're probably more expensive than my college tuition. Instead, I lower my head and swallow up his release, moaning as his salty, masculine flavor coats my tongue.
"Sweet Jesus,"
he mumbles, then reaches out to tenderly stroke my cheek.
"I fucking love you, baby."
"Nah, you just love Roadhead."
"You."
He stubbornly shakes his head.
"I love you."
Damned if my heart doesn't soar. I settle back in my seat, gazing out the window as we cross the bridge toward New Jersey. I don't know where the heck he's taking me, but I'm happy to let him. I'd follow Dean De Laurentiis to the ends of the earth, to the bowels of a volcano if he asked me to be the Meg Ryan to his Tom Hanks, to fucking Mordor if he asked me to be the Sam to his Frodo, to...
"We're here,"
he announces. I'm jolted out of the most ridiculous train of thought I've ever ridden. Dean parks the BMW in front of a small building in what seems to be an industrial area in Newark. I peer through the windshield to read the sign. Then I gasp. My head whirls toward him. He's grinning. "Oh my God, really?"
"Yep."
He hops out of the car and rounds the front bumper to open my door. I take the hand he holds out, and I'm practically skipping all the way to the glass double doors. Excitement bubbles inside me. My chest feels hot and gooey, and the thick layer of emotion clinging to my throat makes it difficult to get a single word out. I look around the front lobby of the dance studio, then meet Dean's twinkling eyes. "I thought you said you didn't want to salsa dance. And Dean De Laurentiis only does what he wants, remember?" He shrugs.
"I am doing what I want."
My eyebrows knit together as I wait for him to clarify.
"I'm making you happy."
Squish. That's the noise my heart makes. Because it's so fucking full of love, it can no longer contain it all.
"Dean. Real life is beckoning. I want to shoo it away and tell it to bother me later. But that's not the way the world works. As much as I loved lying on the beach with my folks, and catching up with my siblings, and putting a smile on my girlfriend's face by surprising her with dance lessons, it's time to snap out of holiday mode and into life mode. My first week back at campus is busier than ever, as hockey practice, classes, and coaching the Hurricanes eats up most of my time. Luckily, Allie is busy with rehearsals again, so she doesn't complain that our sex life is pretty much a series of quickies this week. On Saturday, the team loses another home game. Nobody is even saying the word playoffs anymore because we all know it ain't happening. Despite that, I keep working one-on-one with Hunter. No matter what happens this season, spoiler alert, nothing will happen. Hunter will still be playing for Briar next year, and hopefully serving as a team leader for the others. Coach O'Shea, who's been shockingly pleasant lately, signs off on an hour of extra ice time for us on Sunday night, which Hunter and I make good use of. The solo session goes well, and I drive home from the arena in a good mood. Since I don't have an early practice tomorrow, Allie's spending the night, and I can't wait to fuck my girlfriend. Really fuck her. I'm talking 3 straight hours of balls-deep heaven instead of the hurried trips to the bone zone we've been taking all week. My head is down as I wander into the kitchen. I'm so focused on the task of checking if Allie texted that it takes a second to register that my roommates are sitting around the table. Even Tucker, who's been AWOL since the new semester started. I don't even bother teasing him about it anymore. It's obvious he has a girlfriend. Or maybe a boyfriend. Fuck, he's so secretive these days that nothing would surprise me. What's up? I ask absently. Nobody says a word. I tuck my phone in my pocket and glance around the table. Their stricken expressions make my heart beat faster. The moisture I glimpse in Logan's eyes make it stop beating altogether. What's going on? I demand. The eerie silence drags on. Logan scrubs his fist over his eyes. Fucking hell, now I'm worried. No, now I'm scared. Seriously, if someone doesn't tell me what's going on right this fucking second. Coach called. Garrett interrupts. His voice is low. Somber. I wait for him to continue. My hands feel like 2 blocks of ice, and now they're starting to shake. He just got off the phone with Patrick DeLuca, and, okay, this is moving in a direction I didn't expect. Pat DeLuca is the coach of the football team. What the hell would he have to say to Coach Jensen? Garrett sees my confusion and keeps talking. I guess DeLuca called him because he knows we're friends with Bo. Bo? This is about Maxwell? I cut in. What about him? Logan averts his gaze. So does Tucker. The only one with the balls to meet my eyes is Garrett, who exhales in a slow, unsteady rush before speaking. He, died. Chapter 30. Dean. My brother and I traveled around Europe the summer after I graduated high school. France, Italy, Spain. And we finished the trip in Germany and Austria. The latter is home to a massive ice cave that Nick insisted on seeing. I'll admit it was pretty fucking cool. The tour only lets you walk the first mile or so, which is covered in ice. Beyond that, the interlocking chambers and endless passageways were formed of limestone. Nick and I weren't interested in one measly mile, so badasses that we are, we broke the rules and snuck away from the tour group. We got lost. Hopelessly fucking lost. And to this day, I still remember the suffocating feeling that came over me. The echo of our voices bouncing off the impossibly high walls. The cold breeze blowing through the cave. The footsteps of the tour guide who came to our rescue. We could hear those footsteps clear as day, but it was impossible to figure out which direction they were coming from. The echoes fucked with our ears. That's how I feel now. I hear Garrett talking, but I can't see him, and I can't be sure of what he's saying. His voice is an echo, bouncing off the walls and off my ears and just kinda swirling around, aimlessly. My brain still can't comprehend the first thing he said. Bo died. As in, he's dead? Bo is dead? Bo Maxwell? My friend, Bo Maxwell? On impact. My head snaps up. It's like Garrett's words are spitballs that he's firing at the wall, and the last 2 finally stick. What? I ask stupidly. His gray eyes are lined with sadness. I said he died on impact. He didn't suffer. I blink, repeatedly. Can you tell it to me again? What happened, I mean? He curses. God damn it, why? Because I didn't hear a word you said, I almost roar. I take a breath and say, because I need to hear it again. Garrett nods, albeit reluctantly. Okay. I stagger to the counter and open the top cupboard. Good, there's a bottle of Jack in it. I twist off the cap and take a deep swig, then join my roommates at the table. I sit next to Tuck, and the Jack Daniels gets passed around as Garrett starts talking again. It's not a very long story, but it's a gut-wrenching one. Beau flew to Wisconsin this weekend for his grandmother's birthday. I already knew this. He called me before he left. We made plans to grab beers on Tuesday night. Last night, the Maxwells celebrated Grandma's 90th at a restaurant in her small town. The roads were icy. They took two cars. Beau was with his dad. His dad was driving. Joanna told Coach DeLuca that dinner was a ton of fun. On the drive back, Beau's father swerved to avoid hitting a deer that darted out in front of the car. The car hit a patch of black ice. It flew off the road, flipping over twice. Then it slammed into a tree. Beau's neck snapped on impact. His father didn't have a scratch on him. I swallow another mouthful of whiskey. It burns my throat and sets my insides on fire. My eyes are on fire, too. They're hot and stinging, and when Garrett finishes speaking, I scrape my chair back and pick up the bottle. Going upstairs, I mumble. Dean, it's Tucker, his voice rippling with sorrow. Tuck barely knew Beau. Neither did Garrett, aside from chilling with him at parties. Logan was close to him, I guess. I know he went over to Beau's place to hang out, but me, I was one of Maxwell's best friends. He was one of mine. Somehow, I make it up the stairs without falling over. My hand shakes so badly I nearly drop the whiskey bottle half a dozen times before I stumble into my room. I collapse on the bed and tip the bottle, pouring a stream of amber liquid into my mouth. It splashes my neck and soaks into the collar of my shirt. I don't care. I just drink more. So, I guess, Beau's dead. He was 23. I drink more. And some more. And then some more until my vision is nothing but a fuzzy gray haze. I'm wasted now. No, I'm beyond wasted. My brain don't work so good anymore. Hands? Working? Forget about it. I try to set the bottle on the nightstand and it crashes to the floor. For some reason, that makes me laugh. I think time passes, or maybe it doesn't. Maybe it's standing fucking still because Beau Maxwell's neck snapped like a twig and now he's dead. Dead. Dunzo. Dunzo. Dean? A voice whispers my name from far, far away. Jeez, maybe I'm in the cave again. Maybe I never left it. How fucked up would that be? If I died in some cave in Austria but didn't know it? If the life I've been leading ever since that Europe trip is really a figment of my imagination, and my dead body is actually decomposing in an ice cave right now. That's fucking trippy, I slur. Dean. Warm hands cut my cheeks. There's a soft curse. Jesus, you're drunk out of your mind. I'm bouncing. No, the mattress is. It's shaking because someone is climbing on the bed with me, and my stomach starts to feel queasy. Nausea sticks to my throat. I swallow. I breathe deeply. I can smell the whiskey, but there's another fragrance in the room, too. Allie's mysterious scent. Baby. I feel my head moving. She's tugging it into her lap, threading her fingers through my damp hair. I'm sweating bullets. Why is it so hot in here? Logan just told me what happened. Her hand trembles in my hair. I'm so sorry, sweetie. Broke his neck. My voice sounds far away, too. It doesn't even sound like my voice, actually. Jesus, I'm so drunk. Disgustingly, pathetically, lost in oblivion drunk. I know, Allie whispers. And I'm so, so sorry. I know you're hurting right now. She strokes my hot forehead. I'm here, okay? I'm here and I'm not going anywhere. I draw a ragged breath. Babe, I mumble. What is it? I lift my head, but the simple act of doing so incites the very thing I was trying to warn her about. The nausea spirals to the surface, and I throw up on my girlfriend's lap.
Allie, the memorial service for Beau is held in the football stadium. The entire team is there, along with the coaching staff, his friends, his family, hundreds of alumni, and thousands of people who probably never even met him. One notable absence? Dean. Before I left the house, he was upstairs in his room, wearing a black suit and a somber expression. He told me to go on ahead with Hannah and Garrett, and that he'd meet me at the memorial. When I get back to the house, he's still in his room, still wearing the black suit and the somber expression. Except now, he's clutching a vodka bottle and his cheeks are flushed. He's drunk. He's been drunk every day this week. Well, either that or high. 2 nights ago, I watched him smoke 4 joints, one after the other, before passing out on the living room couch. Logan had to haul him over his shoulder and carry him upstairs, and the two of us had stood in the doorway, looking at Dean passed out and spread-eagled on the bed. People grieve in different ways, Logan had mumbled. I get that. Believe me, I get it. When I lost my mom, I went through the various stages of grief, denial and depression, mostly, until eventually I learned to accept that she was really gone. It took a while to reach that acceptance, but I got there. Dean will get there too. I know he will. But it's been painful, no, unbearable, to watch him turn to alcohol and weed this week when he could have been turning to me.
Couldn't do it,
he mutters when he sees me in the doorway. He'd taken off his jacket and tie, and the collar of his white dress shirt is askew. His blonde hair is mussed up, as if he's been running his fingers through it repeatedly. I enter the room with timid strides, still wearing the simple, high-necked black dress I chose for the memorial.
Just couldn't stomach it, baby.
It's a whisper, ringing with misery.
I kept picturing his parents and Joanna, seeing their faces.
Dean sets the vodka bottle on the dresser and slowly sinks to the edge of the bed. Taking a breath, I sit beside him and rest my head on his shoulder. She's saying,
What?
Joanna, I say quietly. There was a stage set up with a piano. She sang Let It Be. It was beautiful and sad. I blink through an onslaught of tears.
It was sad and beautiful.
Dean makes a choked noise. I stroke his cheek with the pads of my fingers. His skin is hot, but he doesn't seem as inebriated as he was last night. He leans into my touch, his unsteady breaths puffing against my hand.
I couldn't do it,
he says again.
I know. It's okay, sweetie. Is it, though? He should have been there, damn it.
Beau's family was there. If they were able to stomach it, then so should Dean. The harsh recrimination sparks a flutter of guilt. Who am I to decide what someone should or shouldn't do? People skip funerals and memorials all the time for all sorts of reasons. Maybe they want to grieve for their loved ones in private. Maybe it's too hard for them. Maybe they just don't believe in funerals. It's not my place to judge, and I force myself to remember that as I gently run my palm over Dean's cheek.
I can't believe Beau is dead,
Dean says dully. I'm momentarily startled because this is the first time he's said Beau's name since it happened. I'm even more startled when I tip my head and glimpse the unshed tears in Dean's eyes. He blinks, and a couple drops spill over, sliding down to where my fingers are stroking his jaw. His tears trigger mine, in the way yawns are said to be contagious. Suddenly, we're both crying. Dean burying his face against my breasts as his whole body shudders in silent sobs. I don't know who kisses who first, or who undresses who, or how we wind up tangled together on the bed, naked, gasping, sticking our tongues in each other's throats and frantically touching each other's bodies.
Megan told me some crazy statistic once about how 80% of people who were interviewed for a grief survey admitted to having sex right before, during, or directly after a funeral. I guess it makes sense if you think about it. Celebrating life in the face of death, needing someone to hold on to, a tangible connection to another living, breathing person. We release simultaneous groans when he slides inside me. No condom, but we haven't been using them since the new semester started. We both got tested before the break, and I was already on the pill. I welcome his thick, pulsing cock into my body, arching my hips to meet his desperate thrusts. The orgasm that sweeps through me stuns me with its force. I didn't think it was possible to feel this kind of pleasure, raw, all-consuming, when I'm so overcome with sadness. Dean makes a deep, tortured noise as he comes, trembling violently as he pulses and spills inside me. His breathing low and shallow, he collapses on top of me, then shifts us over so my sweaty back is plastered to his sweaty chest. I feel moisture on the back of my neck, not perspiration, but tears. All the tears he would have been trying to hold in if he'd gone to Beau's memorial. I roll toward him, wrapping my arms around his broad shoulders as he cries for the friend he lost. I don't know how long we stay in that position, but eventually Dean goes still and falls asleep with his cheek pressed up against mine. For the first time in 7 days, I feel a tiny flicker of hope. Hope that the emotional release he'd just experienced will ease some of his grief, lead him closer to the road of acceptance. The worst thing about hope, though, more often than not, it leads to disappointment. 31. Allie. Over the next 2 weeks, all I can do is stand idly by and watch Dean spiral. He has a new routine. He wakes up in the morning, he goes to class, he goes to practice, then he comes home and drinks or smokes himself into a stupor. Amazingly enough, he still finishes his course readings and turns in assignments. When I sneak a peek at one of the papers he's written, I discover that it's good. It's like he handed the reins over to the intelligent brain he doesn't like people knowing about, and is now operating on autopilot. He's doing it on the ice, too, just letting his strong, athletic body and his years of training take over and do the job for him. His heart, hell, his consciousness, I'm starting to think, doesn't play a role. Neither does his libido. That's gone, too. Well, no, not quite. It rears up at a certain threshold of his fucked upness, somewhere between buzzed and unconscious. But I turn him down every time, because the guy who's flashing me those cocky grins, who's whispering dirty things in my ear and whose skillful hands are attempting to work under my shirt or into my pants, it's not my boyfriend. My boyfriend doesn't want to fuck me only when he's drunk, and my boyfriend's carefree grins aren't drug or alcohol-induced. Dean De Laurentiis fucks because he loves to fuck, and he smiles because he goddamn loves to smile. This drunk, stoned Dean is an interloper. He doesn't even care when I tell him I'm not in the mood, because he isn't in the mood either. The substances surging through his blood are just making his body think he is. He's grieving. I repeat these words to myself 100 times a day. I remind myself that Beau Maxwell is dead and that Dean misses him desperately. I chide myself for getting angry over the fact that he's handling Beau's death in a different way than I would. But, damn it, I don't know how to handle the way he's handling it. What am I supposed to do, take him to rehab? He's not an alcoholic. He's not a drug addict. And the worst part is, the booze and weed have no effect on his academic or hockey life. He just rolls out of bed in the morning and skates like a champion or aces a test. There's one thing missing from his routine, however. The hurricanes. After the news of Beau's death broke out, time kind of stood still for a week. Dean and Logan were excused from hockey practice because they were close with Beau, and Dean bailed on the middle school practices too. I thought it was a temporary hiatus, grief leave, if you will. But now 3 weeks have passed and Dean still refuses to go back. I urged him to reconsider, but all that got me was an emphatic no. He flat out said he doesn't want to work with the kids anymore. I suspect it's because working with them brings him joy, and right now, he doesn't want to feel joy. He doesn't want to feel anything. Me? I'm plenty of things. Sorrow, frustration, anger, which then leads to guilt, because he lost his best friend, for fuck's sake. I'm not allowed to be angry with him. Today, I'm feeling determined. I've decided that Dean can't wallow in grief forever. At some point, he'll find a way to pull out of this tailspin he's caught in. And when that happens, I don't want him looking around and discovering that he lost something important to him. The Hurricanes are important to him. I park Dean's car in front of the arena and kill the engine. He was already on his 4th beer when I left the house, where I've been staying ever since Beau died. I told him I needed to borrow his car so I could buy tampons. Life hack. If you don't want someone asking you questions, say the word tampon and the conversation ends. I enter the small building and walk down the hall, past the vending machines and toward the double doors leading to the rink. A chill hits my face as I push through the doors. On the ice, the boys are in the middle of a fast-paced drill that involves skating super fast and then stopping super hard. I don't really get it, but sure. Turning my head, I catch sight of a lone figure in the bleachers. Dakota. Her face lights up when she spots me. I wave at her, then hold up one finger to indicate I'll be a minute. I approach the low wall near the home team bench just as Doug Ellis skates up.
Allie, hi.
He peers at the entrance.
Dean with you?
I shake my head and he looks disappointed. So do the boys, who clearly recognize me from the handful of times I met Dean here so we could go for dinner. I think they associate my face with the assistant coach they'd idolized. Ellis tells the kids they have 5 minutes of free skate, then turns to me and listens without comment as I apologize for Dean's absence and assure him that Dean will be coming back soon. He's going through a rough patch right now, I say quietly. Ellis nods.
He told me about his buddy. It was all over the local papers, too. The football quarterback, huh?
I nod back. Beau Maxwell. He. I picture Beau's sparkling blue eyes and rogue grin, and my heart clenches. He was a really great guy. I swallow a lump of sadness.